Welcome to Conservation Unfiltered, a podcast all about the North American model of conservation and your chance to dive into conversations about trends, research, and outdoor activities. It's time to get wild with the 2021 Conservation Media Award-winning host, Jason Creighton.
Basically said, look, we need to come up with programs and a vision and a strategic type, tactical way to go about this. And our vision is to basically connect Pennsylvanian residents to their state wildlife, which is the Game Commission, from anywhere. That's how simple it is.
Hello and welcome everyone to another episode of the Conservation Unfiltered podcast, presented by Conserve the Wild. I'm your host, Jason Creighton, and this is episode 91. We've got wildlife on Wi-Fi. Today, I have a member of the Pennsylvania Game Commission coming on to discuss a wonderful educational experience called Wildlife on Wi-Fi. Now, the guest today is Dan Lynch. He's the Wildlife Education Specialist, and he's also a deputy state game warden as well. He's been in both positions since 1994. He hunts, he traps, he's a fisherman, he's a camper. He is a man that lives for the outdoors, and he passes on that passion through education. So we're going to be talking about how he got to the PGC to begin with, why the PGC feels that education of conservation themes is important. And of course, we're going to dive into what is wildlife on Wi-Fi and how can you, the listener, me, how can we all get involved and take part in this wonderful program? So let's just dive right into it right now. Welcome back, everyone. Today's guest, someone super special from the Pennsylvania Game Commission, a little bit of a like-minded individual in what he's trying to do, Dan Lynch. Dan, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks, Jason.
So as an educator, let me rephrase. As an educator and a conservation enthusiast, someone who considers himself a conservationist, anytime I get a chance to talk to someone who is educating about conservation in another in any avenue, I really want to talk to them, and I'm glad that we were able to connect. But before we get into what it is exactly that we're going to talk about today, what program we're going to talk about today, can you give everyone just a little bit of a brief look into your path to the Pennsylvania Game Commission?
Sure. So I started out as a person who was interested in livestock. My bachelor's is in large animal science. That's what I wanted to do. I really didn't want to teach. Both my parents were teachers, and I guess I just thought, I don't think that's what I want to do. So I ended up getting a bachelor's degree at Delaware Valley College. Now it's Delaware Valley University, and got a job right out of there managing a Black Angus farm in Northern Jersey, which was totally cool because on the day of my interview, the guy who was going to work for said, but you do like hunting, right? And I'm like, yeah. He goes, because you'll be allowed to hunt while you're here. I'm like, okay, I'll take the job. He goes, you don't know what the job is. I'm like, cool, I'll take the job. So it turned out to be a really cool first experience, out of college. And it lasted for about 3 years, and the farm kind of dissolved, and I decided, I think I'd like to teach. So my sister-in-law was involved at, and she still is at Penn State in the ag education program. And I ended up going back for one more year to get my teaching certificate. I had taken some night courses, so I didn't need more than 1 year. And I ended up getting a general ag education certificate and general science teaching certificate. And after that 1 year of school, I ended up getting a job at Kutztown High School, and I taught agriculture science there for 4 years. In those 4 years, I had my students involved a lot with the Game Commission. And some of the folks that I work with now are the ones who kind of put me on this path, because after 4 years of my students mentoring, like going out on shadowing all the game wardens, they'd come back and tell me how cool it was. And I was like, man, that's what I want to do. And they came back and said, hey, you know, the Game Commission is, this is back in 1993, the end of 1993, said, hey, they're going to have a teaching position with the Game Commission and nobody in-house is putting in for it. I'm like, yeah, right. And they said, yeah, we're going to do it. And I applied and I got lucky. And I've been with the agency now for, this is my 27th year. And so you never know how things are going to, how they're going to shake out. But yeah, so I've, you know, ended up when I was teaching on my side of the family, my wife's side of the family, we had at one point, we had 18 active teachers. So we have a lot of teaching background in the family, not just ag, but all kinds of, I was the only ag teacher, but all kinds of other things. So I think teaching, I guess, was sort of in my blood. And talking about wildlife and conservation is just what I've been doing for pretty much my whole career. So.
Well, that's awesome. I know a lot of people, you know, as a lifelong hunter, I have grown up knowing a lot of other hunters. Mm-hmm. And I feel like a lot of people think of the Game Commission as just a group of guys sitting around the table making season times and bag limits. And then there's a group of guys and gals that are in uniform as game wardens walking around trying to bust you for every little thing. But there's more to the Game Commission than that.
There's an awful lot more to the Game Commission than that. Yeah. So I'm glad you said gals too, because that's one thing we got to make sure that we understand, that this is a career that is for both men and women. Okay. And even though we are, primarily based as a male organization, the folks that I work with on my team here in the Southeast region, for the most part, I'm one of the few guys that is on the team, you know, and I really like that. I think that's how it should be. We need to expand. We need to explain to not just hunters, which is a small population of Pennsylvania, but to all Pennsylvanians, what our state agency is all about, that we're about all wild birds and mammals in Pennsylvania. And that, you know, this is a great career opportunity. And there are so much more, you know, even though, you know, game wardens themselves, and I'm also a deputy game warden, game wardens themselves being in uniform in a marked vehicle out there, you may think that that's the majority of people in Pennsylvania Game Commission, but that's not true at all. If we were at full complement, which I don't think in my 27 years we've ever been at full complement, we'd have about 135 officers out in the field, and we have over 600 folks that work for the Game Commission. And there's an awful lot of other careers, opportunities. And later on, when we talk about our Wildlife on Wi-Fi program, we'll talk about a career section. And that's one of the things that we're trying to do, is let people know that, hey, there's a lot more. Hey, there's absolutely nothing wrong with being a game warden, but that's a small percentage of the people that work for our agency. And help to make everything, you know, if you have a great time out hiking, and man, I saw all these different types of birds in spring, and that was due to a lot of people's efforts, and not just agency folks, but lots of partnerships. So it's awareness about what we're all about is what I've been doing for 27 years.
So. Yeah. And, you know, as a hunter trapper education instructor, you know, I've been able to learn more and more about the Game Commission just purely from the fact that I've been exposed to more people within the Game Commission. Biologists, obviously, our local game warden that helps us run the program, but then also deputies as well. And, you know, just being able to understand that they're, you know, the level at which the Game Commission works, and it's not just for hunting species. You know, you guys, all of you are, you know, as an agency, you're in charge of all the species that utilize Pennsylvania lands, that, you know, even migratory, you know, some of the migratory birds and things like that. So, you know, that little bunny rabbit that you see, yeah, it's a game species. The deer, obviously game species, but then also the robin, you know, warblers, orioles that I've been seeing a ton of this spring. Sure. I mean, you're working as an agency towards the benefit of all of those species.
Sure. Yeah. You know, most people, Jason, don't realize that there's 480 plus species, 413 of them are birds, and 66 are mammals. And most of them are not what we consider non-game species. Not that they're not important, but they make up the majority of critters that we have in Pennsylvania. They're not ones that you're going to see on a license plate or see on somebody's hat. You know, you're rarely going to see a golden wing warbler patch on a hat. You're going to see a white-tailed deer, bear, turkey, or an elk because it's a common species that we have a lot of. They're not endangered. They're not threatened. But, you know, we provide a lot of work on our game lands, which is, you know, obviously the games, the lands that the Game Commission owns, creating habitat for not just those game species, but for many other species. And by creating habitat for golden wing warblers, you benefit lots of other species out there. And yeah, that's something that I've always, you know, tried to keep at the forefront is that, yeah, we're familiar with all these common critters, but there's an awful lot of other critters out there that are super important. And, you know, and it's good for all Pennsylvanians to know, not just hunters and trappers. I mean, seriously, that's a small percentage of Pennsylvanians and a very important part, but all 12.7 million people are important.
Yeah. And that's why personally, I love doing habitat work is, you know, if, and I don't mean this to come off as I'm casting dispersions, to people that maybe bait deer or bear. There's applications in hunting, you know, where that is the most effective and the best way. Obviously, you know, we don't have that option in Pennsylvania to hunt over bait. And the reason why I prefer habitat work over bait is, you know, if you're just dumping out some corn, yeah, you'll have some bear or maybe a turkey or two or and deer that are coming in, and maybe it's benefiting them from a feed standpoint. But when you're working on habitat and planting native species, you know, planting an oak tree, planting a crabapple tree or something similar, that not only provides, you know, good quality nutrition and structure in whatever space you're planting that kind of thing for, you know, deer and turkey, but then also all those other bird species, you know, like you mentioned, the vast majority of them are not game species. And we need those birds. We need the bees, you know, to be able to pollinate. So, you know, to be able to work in that sort of habitat space and benefit a wide range of species, yeah, you might be focusing on that game species, but, you know, to be able to benefit them all, it's going to also benefit, you know, you as a hunter as well.
Sure.
So why is it, why back in 1993 or 94, did the Game Commission decide like, hey, we need to have this sort of teaching education role in what we're doing? Why is it important for the PGC to also have this education arm?
So back at that time, actually one of the assistant INE directors was also a former ag teacher, Carl Grable. And he taught at Ephrata High School. And I think he had a really big say in, look, we need to put actual educators, full-time educators out in the field. And so I think that's how I lucked out, was that push at the time. And the agency saw that as a value that we really needed to do that. You know, the more educated people are, like my whole goal is not to turn people into hunters and trappers at all. By the way, I trap way more than I hunt, just so you know. We can talk trapping if you want, but
you're one of the
that
few,
is not my goal at all.
Still out there.
yeah, that is not my goal at all. My goal is to see how many of the 12.7 million people we can educate about wildlife. So when you flick on, you know, some TV show or TikTok or whatever, and you see these things and you're like, oh, that's true. Well, maybe it is and maybe it's not. Like, let's put facts out there and let's let people make informed decisions. So to me, you know, if you make an informed decision about something, whether you are for it or against it, I'm cool with that. But if you're just going because, you know, somebody said something and, you know, and you didn't check into it at all, you didn't do your homework to see if it's actually legit, then, you know, you can be very hypocritical, and I have no problem calling people out on that. Like, I could care less if you hunt or trap or eat meat or whatever, as long as you're informed and you make an informed decision. So I'm like to be part of that organization that helps to put facts out there to help people make informed decisions. Because in general, Pennsylvanians are okay with regulated hunting and trapping, as long as you're doing it right, as long as you're following, you know, they don't know that we're following the North American model of wildlife conservation. They don't know that, but we are. All state agencies in the United States and Canada follow that. So there's different tenets on there, like, you know, we no longer do market hunting. We're not shooting deer to feed groups of people, you know, and we're doing it out of season and all that kind of good stuff. That's not part of it. It's regulated. When people understand that things are regulated by game wardens, okay, and they don't make up the rules. They're literally police officers following the, you know, enforcing the rules and regulations. We don't, the game wardens and deputy game wardens, we don't make up the rules and regulations. We enforce them. And that, you know, that the agency cares about wildlife. We care more than just about game species. We care about all 480 species. And that we don't hunt endangered and threatened species. And that we utilize what we hunt. People are okay with that. If they weren't, we'd eliminate it because it would be very easy to do, Jason. There's just not that many people to quote vote that way. So it's very, very important that the general population is educated about how things are done. And then, you know, would I like more people to do it? Of course. Why wouldn't we? You know, but 12.7 million people are not going to buy hunting licenses. We have 800 to 900,000 people that buy hunting licenses. Okay. And hunting licenses aren't expensive. The general hunting license is the same in 2021 as it was in 1999. So, I mean, if you have a business model, you're probably not going to be in business if you're selling whatever at the same thing. But obviously you can buy other tags, you can buy other things, but we are about managing all wildlife, not just game species. And our hunting constituents, which of course I am part of, is very, very important. But it's also really important that we educate people about wildlife and conservation. So conservation is different than preservation. And I know you know this, but people think we're a preserve. We're not a preserve. We may have some areas that are off limits to folks on our game lands, and that's specifically for wildlife, okay? Because we allow people to go wherever they wanted, wildlife wouldn't be on our property. We'd create all this habitat and no animals would be there. But we're not preserving. We are using the wise use of something, and that is conservation. So there is a take, okay? It's not the reason most people go hunting is the kill, but it is part of it. And, you know, I explain that in lots of programs to lots of different audiences, but there is a difference between conservation and preservation. And I'm not saying preservation is bad. I'm just saying that's not what, we're not a preservation agency, we're a conservation agency. And I'm not saying the other one's bad. I'm just saying people need to know the difference. That's all.
Yeah. And, you know, there's room in our country for both conservation policies and
you bet
preservationists.
I agree with you.
You know, yep. And, you know, that's something that tends to throw some people off is they might drive past the same state game lands for years. And then all of a sudden one day they drive past and they say, well, look at it. It looks like a mess. You know, there's a timber harvest there and it looks terrible because treetops were left. And why didn't they take this tree? This tree's beautiful wood. The goal of timber harvests for the game commission. Yeah. I mean, to get some money out of that resource is beneficial because then you can turn that money into education, habitat work, all kinds of different things.
Right.
But you still have to have that habitat mindset in mind. What looks good to us, the state park that looks, you know, state park, any
aesthetically pleasing,
anything that looks aesthetically pleasing to us is not good for wildlife. You know, I look outside and I see a beautifully manicured lawn. I also never see wildlife because there's nothing there for them. They, you know, most wildlife likes what we would consider messy. So just because it doesn't look good doesn't mean it's not doing a positive or not having a positive impact on wildlife that we have in Pennsylvania, which is the main goal of the agency.
Sure. And, you know, and obviously not the say anything negative about a park-like setting because DCNR on their state parks and state forests, they do a lot of habitat management and wildlife management. Their goals are very similar to ours, but they also have a much more recreational goal in certain areas. For instance, you know, if you're talking around the state park buildings and or depending on what's going on there, yes, they're not going to have a lot of low shrubs and understory and things like that. But if you look at in general, they have huge properties that they do manage just like ours. but just like either on a state forest or on state game lands, just like you said, you know, unless you take somebody out there where they can ask questions, or we put a sign out and says, by the way, the reason that certain trees are standing is they are dead trees and they are snags, which provide insects and so food and shelter for different types of wildlife, both birds and mammals. And then those beautiful trees that you just mentioned that they left, those are seed trees, because we obviously want to make sure that we still have oak and chestnut and everything else that has a good seed base. Or for, you know, we're seeing a lot more prescribed fire now, Jason. We're using it, so are other agencies. And it's not a wildfire, it's a prescribed fire. But if you go look at it right after, like, oh my gosh, they decimated it. And you go back 2 weeks later, then a month later, then a year later, you just won't believe what happens when we use fire to manage both grasslands and trees. It cuts down on herbicides, cuts down on on chainsaws, it cuts down on all kinds of things. And the seed is already out there. We just need sunlight to get to it. And by taking, not only by helping to improve the next forest, but eliminating all that fuel in case there was a wildfire. I mean, a wildfire is completely different than a prescribed fire. A wildfire that we see and watch on TV where out west, where the flames are above the trees and all that, that is it, that is a wildfire. That's not controlled. That's not a prescribed fire. It's very similar to getting a prescription. We know exactly what we want to do, where we want to do it. And it's highly controlled. Like sometimes, you know, they're all ready for that to happen on a particular day. And that morning, the humidity is wrong, the wind is wrong, whatever, and it's called off. Like you had all these people that are ready to go do it and they just can't do it. And you know, that's what is the difference between them. But you know, we try to do the best that we can to educate as many people. You know, it comes back to education again, whether we're talking about doing a timber sale or a prescribed fire or teaching people about wildlife or whatever, the more people we can educate, the more ways we can get it out. Like for instance, doing this podcast, the better off we are. And, you know, we want an informed public. To me, that's, you know, the most important thing that we can do.
So speaking of that education, great transition right into this wildlife on Wi-Fi. What is it? What is the goal? What are we trying? I mean, we know we're trying to educate, right?
Sure.
So how does it work? And, you know, what's sort of the main lessons that we're throwing in there?
Cool. So back, you know, last February and March, when the pandemic hit, several of us, kind of people that focus primarily on education, and there's not that many of us out of that 600 plus, by the way, there's a handful, said, hey, look, what, like, we all had in-person programs and teacher workshops and events scheduled, and that was it, you know, for everybody had that. And what are we going to do? So we got together and basically one of our people, Mandy Marconi, I'll throw her name out there. She's our environmental education specialist in the North Central region up by the Elk Range. She actually coined the phrase wildlife on Wi-Fi, and we thought, man, that is such a cool thing. So we had a small team, maybe five or six people in the very beginning. We've expanded it a little to maybe about eight or nine people now. Basically said, look, we need to come up with programs and a vision and a strategic type, you know, tactical way to go about this. And our vision is to basically connect Pennsylvanian residents to their state wildlife, which is the Game Commission, from anywhere. That's how simple it is. Connect Pennsylvania residents to their state wildlife from anywhere. And we're doing it lots of different ways. Now, I've been with the agency 27 years. I'm not the most tech person. Fortunately, I've got some younger folks that work with us that have helped me out. I've had to learn how to navigate five or six different platforms, Jason, something I never thought I was going to have to do. Neither did anybody else for the most part, but we created this program. So it's not a platform, it's a program that people can come to the Game Commission. They can see lots of information, very short videos. They can download lessons. So it's not just formal education either. It's also non-formal education. So again, we're not trying to like narrow this piece of the pie down and say, oh, we're just interested in you. We're interested in just about any group that's out there so that you could educate yourself by going online, or you can sign up and request a program from one of our educators or one of our game wardens anywhere throughout the state. So, you know, prior to our getting stuck talking, we were talking about, you know, like there's some benefits that have actually happened through this pandemic. I mean, I don't mean to demean the pandemic, it's terrible, but we've had people that we've had contact with that we never would have had contact. They didn't know anything about us and they probably never would have. But we've been involved in lots of cyber schools. We didn't market to cyber schools at all. And so we've been able to do virtual programs, Zoom, Skype, Teams, GoToMeeting, you name it, all different types of things through the computer. I mean, it's not the greatest way to do it. You're never going to hear me say, hey, that was better than an in-person, because it wasn't. Okay. It's hard to do hands-on stuff. Like I'm a kinesthetic learner. Like I need to be holding a fox pelt or a skull or whatever. And I can show you one. It's not the same. It's not the same, but we couldn't just sit around and do nothing. Like we needed to do this. And so we got together, we created this, what we call Wildlife on Wi-Fi. It has grown. We spent a lot of time creating content that we could put on there. And then our marketing team and our Bureau of Marketing and Communications and Bureau of Information and Education in our Harrisburg headquarters has helped us a great deal. And they are part of our Wildlife on Wi-Fi. So it's not just, it's Mandy Marconi from the North Central, and it's multiple people here in the Southeast, and it's our marketing and Bureau of I&E. And we have reached out to a lot of folks and said, hey, we're not great at this part. Can you help us with this part? And they're like, sure. And I will tell you this, that in the agency I've been with 27 years, I have lots of great colleagues, but this has brought us together a great deal. Like we meet once a week, every week. And we didn't do that before, but there's no way we did. And we share responsibilities like, okay, Jason, you know, you're in charge of creating this video and somebody else is gonna help you edit it. You know, we've had to do a lot with our iPhones. One of our wildlife education technicians, Jordan Sanford, is really good. It's intuitive for somebody in their 20s. I grew up running around catching frogs, and they grew up immediately and someone handed them an iPhone or an Android, and that's intuitive to them. It's not intuitive to me, but we've been able to work together and create this thing. It turned out to be an award-winning thing. You know, we've got a national award called the Stephen Kellert Award from the Association of Fish and Wildlife Agencies. We got a state award from the Pennsylvania Association of Environmental Educators for outstanding environmental education. And even Governor Wolf recognized us, which was kind of cool for environmental programs. And so sometimes you need those kinds of things for other people to take notice, even though that's not why we do it. But when they do, like, you know, that's a benefit, you know, that's kind of cool. And we've had lots of people contact us and say, hey, this is really cool. I can use this in my classroom. So we created like five kind of content areas, and they are explore backyard wildlife, celebrate Pennsylvania birds, discover wildlife science, celebrate PA mammals, and careers in wildlife. And I'll tell you, Jason, we talked a little, you don't mind me keep going right here.
No, have at it.
Okay, cool. This is great. The careers in wildlife to me is very, very important. Because like you said, people are like, oh, you know, you can be a game warden and work for the game commission. Okay. It's not an easy thing to do, first off. Okay. You know, we're actually going, you know, in an interesting part in our history. So normally every 3 to 4, maybe 5 years, we will have a cadet class. Okay. But for several years, like 8 or 9 years ago, we didn't have that. Like there just wasn't a class. Well, if you think about that, it's going to catch up to you eventually. And there's going to be a whole bunch of retirements and nobody to fill them. So we have a cadet class in right now that was the second class in a row. And the testing is being finished up for the third. There'll be 3 in a row, Jason. I don't know that that's ever happened in our history where we've had 3 classes right in a row. And we needed to do that to catch up with all the retirements, you know, people who are my age, like 55, 56, and they're close to 27 to, I have 31 years with the state, and a lot of those people are going to retire, and we need people to fill that void. And it is really nice having new, energetic. Not that our people aren't passionate, because people don't work for the game commission to become millionaires. Okay. They, because if you do, let me know the first one who is, because I don't know them. But people work for the game commission, no matter what career they have, because they're passionate about conservation, wildlife, wildlife education, giving something back. And obviously, you need to survive by doing more than being a volunteer. Like lots of us volunteer for other things, but you also need to survive. So you need a job. And the Game Commission pays well, but no one's going to become a millionaire. Like it's not in the cards there. So it's interesting when, you know, people find out about all the different careers, like these game lands that we all talk about, that many people use. You know, if it wasn't for the people on the ground doing the actual mowing and planning and picking up all the trash and helping create the habitat, like in our land management system, that stuff's not going to happen. Like that doesn't happen strictly through volunteers or through game wardens. That happens to people in all of our land management. You know, we sell natural resources like timber and coal and gas and mineral rights and things like that on our game lands. That is very, very important by our foresters. And you know, if we didn't have our GIS department, which, you know, 8-10 years ago, we didn't really have that. We now have GIS people who are, you know, information system mapping people, because everybody uses maps. I use maps. Deputy game wardens use maps, foresters use map, land managers, everybody uses mapping. Mapping is super important. So there's a whole thing that people didn't even know. Like I do a lot of college programming, and I recommend to all college students, no matter what your major is, get a minor or some classes at least in GIS, because there isn't anything out there that isn't connected to GIS anymore. And if Jason, you and I have the exact same degree and we have the same life skills, and we go for an interview and you also have GIS, you just set yourself apart from me, because everything else being equal, you also have GIS. And that's something in my agency or my organization that I'm going to want. And you already have you might not be an expert, but you understand it. So I don't also have to train you now to understand it. So those kinds of things are important. You know, we tell people about all of the other things that you can do in the game. You know, each one of our, we have 6 region offices and a Harrisburg headquarters, and we have administrative and clerical people in all of those. There's a really good jobs working for the state. They pay well. They're good jobs. Hopefully, you know, soon everybody will literally be back in an office. You know, like this pandemic has created, there's no such thing as a snow day or anything like that anymore, because everybody's got a computer. You're still working from home. A benefit there, because you don't get much done on a snow day, but now you can. And then, you know, you're obviously, there's levels that you can go up as a game warden. You could become a canine officer, which is pretty cool. We have only 6 of them in the state. That's a relatively, in the past 10 or 12 years, new position. That's a really interesting thing. And they're more than that. They also are kind of like a supervisor type position, where they help with all kinds of investigations, all kinds of things that go on online. You know, a lot of people that do bad things are, you know, poachers out there are pretty stupid. They put things on Facebook and all that kind of good stuff as if they can't be caught, as if we couldn't watch them or see them and investigate them. And we do. You know, so there's a lot of other careers out there. And that's why we really focused on that careers thing. And it's hands-on. It lets a student or an adult go through and actually realize just how many careers there are in our agency that they didn't know about.
Yeah, I mean, I look at this pandemic, and like I said, we don't want to, I'm right there with you. I don't want to sort of minimize the impacts of this pandemic. No. But as the human race, we've been very adaptable throughout our history. And this is just another way that we've adapted. We've taken this terrible, terrible circumstances, and we have found a way to create something new that in my view, I'm right there with you with the idea that I like to have my hands on things, right? Sure. I like to be actively doing things. But if we can take, this virtual classroom, this virtual mm-hmm. experience, and then inspire some kids or even That's adults right. to then take the next step and exactly. maybe go to an in-person workshop.
Right. That's the action part of it. Right. You know, you learned about it virtually, and then we want you to take action, even if it's just taking a hike, even if it's just someplace that you never knew existed and it's free. I mean, it's public land, like, but you also need to know that somebody paid for it, you know, and there's rules and regulations, and people like that. They want to give back when they hear that. They're like, well, how can I help? Okay, well, maybe you can volunteer. Maybe you like just the shooting sports. Did you know we have ranges? You don't have to be a hunter to use them, but you do have to buy a range permit. That's another way to give back. That's cool. One of the other ways in this Wildlife on Wi-Fi program that we tried to teach people about the things that we do and try to, it's kind of a raw experience. It's not a perfect production video, okay? It's this thing called From the Field. So From the Field, we had the same problems where, like, we couldn't go out and, you know, what if the Wi-Fi wasn't good? Or what if, you know, there's a dog barking while we're trying to video something and that's all you heard, and people concentrate and it just took away from the experience. So we did things like we went out with a forester onto at an active timber sale and went with them and asked them questions. And they talked about kind of like what you did with me. Hey, what's your background? And then what's going on here at this site? Like, and what are the benefits and why did you do this? So that might be a From the Field. We did a From the Field from the elk check station during the elk hunt up there and up in the North Central. We did a From the Field barn owl banding and kestrel banding. So, you know, we have barn owls and kestrels are cavity nesting birds. So they'll go in man-made boxes, or maybe they'll be like, barn owls like to hang out in silos and in people's barns and stuff. And our biologists, in their normal routine to keep study of them, will go at a certain time before they can fly away, before they fledge, and they will band them so that we can keep track of how long they live and, you know, what's the mortality rate, that kind of stuff. Well, we decided let's bring this to the public because we can't bring the public to us, okay? Because many times it's on somebody's private property. You don't want 150 people coming to your house, Jason, probably. And so we did this from the field. So it's very raw. Like we did it through iPhones. Like there's not a multi-camera system with boom mics and all that kind of, because you have a lapel mic so that we can hear you real well. But these things turn, and so we filmed the video, then we told people when we were going to do it. And then you could watch it. And then the people who actually, the biologist or the educator or the forester, was actually there. It was kind of like a webinar, so that you could be sending in questions. And then this person who actually did it answered the questions that day. And so it was close to being live, you know, but there's lots of problems with live streaming, as you know. And we wanted to make sure that you had a good experience. So we're doing more of them. We've done duck banding is an excellent one. We do a lot of things and we try to involve the public, but if, you know, you told me you're out in Western Pennsylvania and this stuff is going on in the Southeast, maybe you can come there, maybe you can't, but now you can watch it from anywhere, you know, and that is an advantage to this Wildlife on Wi-Fi, is we're doing things that literally anybody could watch and get some information, then they can make an informed decision. Even duck banding itself, people are like, oh, I don't think people should shoot ducks. Really? You have no idea the science that goes into determining how many mallards, you know, what their survival rate is every year. Then their U.S. Fish and Wildlife and the states get to determine the length of season and the bag limit. There's a lot more to it than just saying, yeah, you can go hunt 6 ducks. Well, yeah, you can, but only certain species. It's a short season, you know, so there's a lot more to it. And I think when people realize that, you're not going to convince everybody, and that's fine. But hey, at least you have the facts and then you make a decision. So sort of get back to that theme all the time.
Yeah, no, I love the accessibility. And like you said, I mean, it's great for someone like me to be able to experience even more of what I'm already interested in, right? As you said, I'm in Western PA, trying to get to Southeastern PA. Like that, that's not likely that that's going to happen. That's, sure. You know, I have to very much plan for something like that. Virtually, it's much easier to plan. Sure. I'm also very aware of my personal privilege based on how I grew up, having a family property with a cabin that's 70 acres that I've been exposed to foresters. I've been exposed to biologists that walked our property and you know, took inventory of what was there and explained to us what they were seeing, sure. You know, helped us guide our habitat management plan. But not everyone has access to that. Like that's a privilege that I've been able to have. So to be able to have these virtual programs, virtual webinars, so that someone who lives in, you know, the south side of Pittsburgh, that maybe the only outdoor green space they've ever been to is maybe Point State Park, you know, and they, you know, this person then takes their child and has them, or maybe a teacher or a community leader, whoever it is, exposes them to one of these virtual programs. Now, all of a sudden, there's a chance that that child or one of those children or even adult can be inspired to start looking into outdoor, the, you know, the outdoor industry, outdoor recreation a little bit more. And maybe that creates someone with a completely different perspective on outdoor recreation that can bring brand new ideas.
I agree with you. And, you know, at a young age, 8 to maybe 12 years old, we start deciding what we like and what we dislike. And we as an agency can't wait till you're a senior in high school or a college student and say, hey, look at this cool thing we have, because you might get some people, but people have changed, you know, and they're kind of set like down a path. Not that they won't change. I mean, I've changed multiple times in my, what I want to do with my job. And I know that's possible, but I also know that getting to people early is really, really important to, you know, for instance, kind of getting back to what you said about, like, sometimes you only have a green space or a tiny little backyard or a bird feeder out back. You know, we do some activities, some things that are on our wildlife on Wi-Fi. I'll just give you one as an example. And I'm doing it tomorrow at a teacher workshop. But the workshop is called, I think you'd love this one. It's called Reading Animal Sign and Tracking. That's what it's all about. It's that 6 hours. Okay. So we've got about 14 folks that are signed up for it tomorrow. It's like our first in-person workshop since I don't know when. Part of it's indoors, part of it's outdoors. And one of those activities, anybody can do at home, and it's on our Wildlife on Wi-Fi page. I think you're probably going to, you know, let people know what that address is later on the podcast, but it's called a track tube. It couldn't be any easier. And it's not something we created. A biologist in West Virginia created it. I have all that information on our Wildlife on Wi-Fi page, but basically it's about a 12-inch section of PVC pipe, and it's a 4-inch diameter. It doesn't have to be the thick stuff. Doesn't have to be Schedule 40. It's just a simple piece of PVC pipe. And on the bottom, on each side, you take a piece of felt, and they make felt now that with sticky on the backside. You cut a little tiny section, put it on the bottom. And then in between the felt, you cut a tiny little piece of construction paper, light colored construction paper, and tape it with a piece of tape. You take that thing, and you could literally, you don't have to have woods. You don't have to have a field. You could have a backyard. And you put that thing maybe under your bird feeder, or maybe next to a pile of rocks or a log pile or against your house or your school. And you take a handful of bird seed. This is how high tech this is. Take a handful of bird seed. And before you throw the bird seed through the pipe, you take ink, and we use like liquid ink, or you could use, you know, non-toxic paint, kids paint, and you put the paint on the pieces of felt. So you've created this little ink pad on both sides. Okay. Take a handful of bird seed, throw it through the pipe, and walk away. They come back the next day. The little critters, moles, voles, shrews, chipmunks, birds, if it's underneath your bird feeder, they go through the pipe. They put their feet on the non-toxic ink. They step across the construction paper and they leave the tracks. Pull the piece of paper out, get a track guide, go online and identify the tracks. It's such a simple way to find out what's in your backyard. Most of these things are nocturnal, not birds, but the other things are nocturnal. And it's a way to study nature without, you're not catching it. It's not caught in a trap. It's not going to get die in the heat or whatever. And it's not going to get hurt. And it's those simple things, like what can you do in your background? We've got this really cool one on how to create a beaver dam with sticks. You could go out and just get a branch that fell down in your yard, and you create this thing with clay and water and sticks, and we can teach you about beavers. I mean, I know these scenes, they sound simple, but they are such an easy thing to do. And teachers are going to do this tomorrow. My crew, my wildlife technicians, three of them, we set out a bunch of these track tubes already yesterday. And then tomorrow is the workshop. The teachers are going to learn how to make one, and then they're going to go see it in action. They're going to take that home. It's so easy to do. And it's things like that, that, you know, you don't have to go out and trap a critter. Like, you could just look for sign. Because most of the time, Jason, when you and I go out looking for something, especially if we bring a group of people with us, you don't see it. You just see what was left there. To me, that's what's really interesting, is reading sign. I told you before, like, I'm really into trapping. It's not about catching the critter. It's about reading all the sign that's out there. And they leave a lot of it. I take people with me all the time just to see. Like, they, when I look at a stream, I look for, if I was a mink, where would I be? And some people are like, well, that looks like rapids, looks like a little bend. And I'm like, well, yeah, that's a point. On that point, every critter comes to that point. Like, what do you mean? I'm like, that's just what they do. And so that's the kind of stuff that I like to teach.
Yeah, that is in my mind, a perfect example of what I was sort of just talking about. Like, that is a great idea. Just using PVC pipe, some felt, some ink, and some paper. That's not even something that I would have thought about. But I did something very similar as a young child with my father. You know, we would walk on our property, and you know, I distinctly remember, I was probably 4 or 5 years old, and I can distinctly remember coming across a bear track in the mud, and my father talking to me about it. You know, we measured it with a tape, mm-hmm. with a tape measure and everything. And then he went back to his truck, drove into town. We got some plaster that he mixed up. He poured in that mud. And now, you know, we have this bear print made of plaster that I still have now, you know, 30 years later. And not only do I still have that plaster print, I have multiple from bears and deer and fox and coyote. Not only do I still have them, I have those memories of making those. And that's the privilege that I grew up with, that if we can get these other ideas to more people, more kids, more people can be exposed to these kinds of.
I agree. And if it progresses to someone who buys a hunting license, fine. If it progresses to somebody who's informed, where someday down the line, a decision has to be made on a vote, those experiences vote the way that you and I, Jason, hope that it goes. But if you're never exposed, you know, I don't want to rely strictly on 900,000 people out of 12.7 million. I don't want to rely on that. And that plaster thing, we're doing that. We're instead of plaster, we're using something called dental stone, just because it's a much more finer. And, but yeah, I mean, and some people, like what you did is what we're doing tomorrow. I have hard plastic tracks, and I could make fake tracks out there. But my team and I went out with sardines and corn and pancake syrup, and we pre-baited an area along a stream and a pond in hopes of getting real raccoons to go back and forth eating up all our sardines and corn and the deer and the corn and everything. And so casting a wild track, a real track, is different than casting one in the air conditioning in wet sand in a classroom. If that's all you can do, that's better than not doing it. But if that's what I taught you to do, then I'd want to take you outside with a Ziploc bag of powder and a water bottle. And then we go find a real track, and then you collect it. And, you know, and that to me, that would mean something more to you, like your bear track did. And
So you've brought up a lot of different activities, some of them hands-on, some of them virtual, that are done. Can you give me, like, I know it's going to be hard to give me like one favorite moment from this wildlife on Wi-Fi program, but can you give me one or two quick ones that you're like, this was really cool. This reaffirms why I do what I'm doing.
Sure. That one's easy, Jason, it turns out. So we have some younger folks that work with us on our team. And they have watched us, some of the more experienced people, for, you know, 6 or 8 months doing this kind of thing. But when you say, guess what? Let's say if you're that person, Jason, I'm like, Jason, you know, when this virtual class is coming up and we're each going to do one at the same time. So there's like 3 first grade classes from your elementary school. And Jason, you're doing one on your own. And then you look at me like, what? Like, wait, what? I'm like, no, you've seen me do it already. I know you can do it. And when they do it, that's it. That's it right there. That way you see the passion in some younger person's, you know, program, and you see that they're doing it on their own. They're taking some of the stuff they saw you and somebody else do. Well, I got news for you. That's the moment right there. Like, you want to pass that stuff on and you want to see other folks do it. And I've got 3 9-month people right now. They're just recently graduating college, and watching them take on leadership or responsible roles, there's no better thing than that.
Yeah. I can't say I get that every day as a teacher, but, you know, cause
yeah, you know what you do sometimes, but like class goes and then the next one comes in and you forget, but sometimes you don't know the impact you've made on people until years later.
Right. You don't get to see it physically every single day.
Right.
But those days that you do, where my student tells me, they did this, they're happy, that they did this, or, you can see it in their, even just see it in their eyes that they're proud of themselves. Like, that's the kind of stuff. I agree wholeheartedly. That's definitely some of my favorite moments from my career. So let's, I don't want to, as much as I want to keep talking to you, I don't want to, I don't want to keep you all day. So let's sort of finish this with, how can someone participate in this program? Like, what can they do to either get signed up or to encourage maybe their kid's teacher to utilize this program? What are some different things they can do?
So I'm thinking you will put out the virtual link.
It is in the episode notes down below. Awesome. So you can, everyone listening can right now can just scroll down there and see that link.
So that there's that virtual link that'll take you right to the Wildlife on Wi-Fi page. You can literally search PGC. You know, you don't even have to spell Pennsylvania Game Commission. Now you go PGC and then our webpage will come up, and then there's a drop-down tab on education, and you click on education. It'll take you, there's a link for Wildlife on Wi-Fi. If you're a school teacher, we, in addition to those 5 content areas, we also have what's called a virtual teacher's lounge that has daily lessons and weekly lessons on those topics. I'm really into wildlife forensics. I teach wildlife forensics a lot. And there's a week-long program that you could do, or you could just have your students do. That particular one takes a little bit more effort because you need to gather some items, but the items are pretty simple. Like, you don't need to go to some high-tech place to get something weird, but, you know, teaching you how to collect fingerprints and how to be, a really good observer. Like, when you look at sign, what do you see? You know, there's interesting things there. Then there's also how to schedule a virtual lesson. You can click on that, and there's a page comes up. We ask you some questions so we can better serve you. Like, you know, where are you located? What is the good email, good phone number for the teacher, ages of the class, numbers of the students, what are you studying right now? And, you know, we have signature programs, but if we can, you know, modify it to something specifically that you're talking about, that makes more sense for us. And if you want a specific type of person, if you want a forester or a game warden or whatever, we'll try and make that work. Our game wardens they've been great about this whole thing. So is our foresters, our land managers. They've been great. And, some of them, they could do it in their truck while they're driving, but they got their computer in their truck. They literally could do it right from there. That's the cool thing about the virtual. So, you know, simply clicking on the link, seeing what we have available, and there is an email to ask any questions that you want. And we have one person that looks at the email, sends it out to the different people throughout the state, so we can help somebody with a specific question or need.
Well, Dan, this has been awesome. I really hope this inspires some people to look into some of the educational programs that the Game Commission has to offer. And thank you for joining me. This has been great.
I appreciate it. And thank you for the offer to come on.
Absolutely. I don't know about you, but I think this is a really cool concept. Like Dan and I both said multiple times in our conversation, the pandemic itself sucks. Everything that's gone along with it has sucked. There are a couple silver linings, and one of them is just the way that agencies, schools, all kinds of organizations have adapted the way that they go about presenting information, and now it's virtual, which means it's more easily accessible to more people. And I think that's an absolutely wonderful thing. I've got to be honest, if anyone from the Game Commission is listening, if you want to open up a new education position within the agency, maybe in the Southwestern region, I might be interested in that. It's awesome that there are people taking their time. This is, you know, 2 weeks in a row now you're hearing from people who are taking time to share their passion about wildlife and about conservation and turn it into an educational way to inspire kids, inspire adults, and really try to take the next step in getting the next wave and next generation of people interested in conservation and wildlife. And it doesn't get any better than that. We need to keep doing it. We need to keep shouting our messages from the rooftops, because we have a finite resource. And if we don't do our best to conserve those resources, whether it's preserve or conserve, we're gonna lose them. You know, as a human population, we're growing and we're gonna keep growing and we're gonna keep expanding and we're gonna keep developing. And we need to do what we can to educate people on how to do that responsibly. And if we can do that as a society, I see us turning a corner and things actually getting better than they are today. And I really hope that we can do that. And it's people like Dan that are spreading that message and doing it to the best of their ability, which is definitely making inroads, somehow, some way, making things better. It's just great. Don't forget, if you're hanging on this long, don't forget the Conservation Unfiltered podcast page on Facebook. That is where you're going to find the most information. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram as well for some lesser informational things. Just, you know, things that we sort of like, things that we can get behind and interact with us. We love to hear from the listeners. And for those of you that have reached out to us, I appreciate it. Until next week, stay wild.